Want access to search and listen to the entire webmasterradio.fm archive of over 1,500 podcasts commercial-free? Just become a webmasterradio.fm elite member for less than 99 cents a day. Otherwise, the last 60 days of content are on the house. Webmasterradio.fm. We're everywhere.
Are your domains working hard enough for you? Now, park your portfolio at RevenueDirect.com to maximize your earnings on traffic. With RevenueDirect's proven domain monetization service, you'll experience better payouts, more options, and smart optimization. Sign up free now at RevenueDirect.com. It's that easy. RevenueDirect. Make more money. Period.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better. It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Welcome your hosts, Byron White and Amanda Smith.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Welcome, Amanda. How are you today?
I'm perfectly great, as usual.
I am so excited because I just prepared my tips for the promotions for the show, and I have to tell you that this is really going to be fun to promote our show with these tips that I came up. And you know, I went into the personal chest here.
Well, I'm glad you finally got around to doing these because I've been on you for about 3 weeks to get these done.
I know. But, you know, it's something that is worth waiting for. I'm going to be talking about cold calling tips in this troubled economy. I'm going to be talking about hot dating tips. Even though I'm a married guy, I am reflecting back on my early days here because we have so many young people in our office. And I'm also going to talk about tips to turn a prince into a king with his wife.
Tell everybody what you're calling those tips.
Well, it's a special tip. It focuses on a theme to that you're just going to have to hear the promotion. So stay tuned to webmasterradio.fm promotions for our show, and you'll get in the know with some really good stuff. But back to our show today. Very exciting show we have today regarding the first ever Life Tips Global Issue Roundtable Discussion. Tell us about our guest today, Robert Britt, Managing Editor of Life Science, Bart Dabick, the resident expert of AboutMyPlanet.com. Where did you come up with this concept of a roundtable?
You know what, Byron? We have so many amazing guests on every week, and everybody always brings something interesting to the table. I wanted to get, you know, a couple experts in here. I want to sit around, and I want to do some hot-fire topics. I want to shoot some serious questions at some serious experts in the field, and I want to see what they've got coming across their desks every way. I think it'd be nice to get a group talk in here.
Well, it's going to be exciting. We're going to want to learn a little bit more about their backgrounds before we bring them on. But I think our goal and objectives as a host should really be to challenge these folks. We need to challenge the way we think about global warming, global issues. You know, we need to really push these experts into helping to find the best path to live a better life. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right after the show right back at you with some tough questions for some great guests we have on today.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Hey, this is Danny Sullivan from the Daily Search Cast. You know, we love bringing you the news every day, and that's made possible by the sponsorship of BruceClay.com. They've just made Inc. Magazine's list of the fastest growing private businesses. They've exhibited and sponsored at my conferences from the very beginning. Bruce has got that long-standing search engine relationship chart, had been out there with the code of ethics, been a search engine expert in the field for ages. But did you know that Bruce Clay can do more than help you with just SEO? They can do PPC, web analytics, web design, marketing strategy, promotion, and branding. Everything you need for success in the online marketplace, you can check it out from the professionals at Bruce Clay Incorporated. For over 10 years, offices worldwide, they've got answers you need. Check them out today at BruceClay.com.
Bruce Clay Incorporated. Need help improving your PPC campaigns? Tired of spending all your time swamped with spreadsheets and manual updates? Turn to Adapt SEM software to optimize your campaigns and to reach your goals. Adapt SEM is one of the most affordable and reliable tools on the market for improving PPC campaigns. Adapt SEM not only optimizes your bids, but also gives you keyword suggestions, competitive research, and helps to test ads, all in one place at flat rate pricing and no long-term commitments. Learn how Adapt SEM can help manage your PPC campaigns better. Check out our free webinar at adapt.com/webmasterradio. Sign up now for a free personal tour. adapt.com/webmasterradio.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here for a fabulous Chateau show today, the first global issue roundtable discussion featuring Robert Britt, managing editor of Life Science, and Bart Dabick, the resident expert at MyPlanet.com. Welcome, Robert and Bart.
Good afternoon, everybody.
I knew you were going to talk both at the same time. See that? That was a test. That was a test. Let's start with Robert Britt. Robert, tell us a little bit about LifeScience.com and your angle with this interesting issue we have today regarding the global issues that we all face today.
Well, you can find information about global warming in a lot of places now, and you can find the news of the day in a lot of places. At LifeScience, we try to bring this issue and other issues in science to the forefront every day. We sort of never stop. And so if you go to our environment section, you'll see a host of things to inform you about what's going on with climate change, what's being done, and what people are talking about.
Bart, you're on deck next. Tell us a little bit about My Planet.
Well, about My Planet, it's a pretty new site. It's been around for just about 2.5 years. And basically, one of the same kind of idea as Robert, we tried to get together a lot of information. There's a lot of blogs coming out there, and we thought it would be great to have a good source of information where people can share, discuss green information, and also, you know, find out how to lead a green life. It seems like right now that's the key aspect of going green is finding that information easily and then letting other people know about it.
I want to ask you both a question regarding making it simple. The web brings us volumes of content, lots of alternatives, lots of choices. What are you doing on your websites, each of you respectively? We'll keep our Robert and Bart order going. What are you doing on your sites to make it simple for people to read something and take action on it?
Well, I think on a daily basis, it goes back to basic journalism skills. You need to keep in mind that whoever might be reading a given article hasn't read all the articles that came before it. And so you need to somehow summarize the story behind the story so that a reader can put some context around the news of the day, and that's a challenge for us on a daily basis. And then, of course, with the web, you've got links back to all that other stuff that people can follow. But we're a filter. It's our job to figure out what's important today, what's happening now, and what people are talking about, and then not only present that to you, but lead you to the background information you need to make informed judgments.
Bart, what's your take on making it simple and making it easy to take action? To take action. I can't stress enough about taking action upon reading some content on your website.
I totally agree. I think that's the key aspect of it. We have our green tips section where we have weekly tips going in, and they're basically written by our writers, and some of them are submitted by our readers as well. And we're keeping them very simple. We're not trying to take somebody's life and swing it around 180 degrees. We realize that it takes one small tip. Maybe you can do a tip a month or something like that, and easily gradually translate your life into a greener life. For example, like when we moved into our condo, I basically got had a bunch of computers. We consolidated a lot of computers, a lot of gadgets, which are the light bulbs, and our bill actually went down by 60%. So it doesn't take a lot of things to change your life, but if you do something, you know, each month, then over a period of a year, like you're going to be at a different point, and you know, leading a much more sustainable life.
Now, for both of you, I think that we can all agree here that environmentalism has undergone a big evolution in the past decade. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, the extent of environmentalism was, you know, maybe recycling. And now we've made a lot of headway in the past few years. Specifically in the past 4 or 5 years, I've noticed a huge evolution. You know, have you guys noticed the same thing? What are some of the changes you've seen? Robert, do you want to weigh in first on this?
Well, I think the big change happened over the past 2 years, really. Things led up to the situation we have now. But when you had finally George Bush acknowledging that climate change existed and that humans were contributing to it, and then you had other vocal proponents getting a platform, Al Gore being one of them, you had more people listening. And I think that the scales begin to tip towards environmentalism being a thing for wackos to environmentalism being a sensible concept of planet stewardship. And then more specifically, or more rapidly, in the past few months, you've had just a tremendous change in the American economy, and in fact in the global economy, food shortages and gasoline price hikes. And this has forced everyone to stop and think about where their stuff comes from, and how much they have to pay for the stuff that comes from the earth, and how they ought to maybe make some changes in their everyday living. So I think the economy, or the bad economy, has done more for environmentalism than any politician or actor.
It's almost been this idea of forced awareness. You know, people are forced to acknowledge the idea of biodiesel fuels because they can't afford to put gas in their cars anymore.
If not forced, at least it makes sense. You know, it makes good sense to your pocketbook to take a look at some alternatives, changing a light bulb, and things like that.
Bart, do you want to weigh in on this?
I think politicians such as Al Gore like made a really big difference, shined a big spotlight, if you will. Also, the internet, the access to information has exploded, and everybody has an opinion right away. And you know, there's 130,000 blogs being put up every single day, so there's a flood of information, which makes it easier for people to go green. At the same time, I think you know, the climate changes, along with everything else, is forcing corporations to make big changes. If you look 5 years ago, we didn't have access to products, you know, and right now you go to a grocery store, you got 30% of the stock product to be green in some way or another. So corporations are seeing in the end that if people have choices, they'll make the better choice. And if they don't change, then they'll go out of business, right? I mean, in the end, like, when you have flooding across the states right now, like, people do see that there's effects of their actions over the past, you know, decades.
Robert, Bart, and Mandy, for that matter, and especially maybe, have you seen any correlation between sort of a new movement that I'm at least reading more about is in this sort of go green, go USA sort of self-sufficiency merger of two interesting models here?
Yes and no, and I think this is all a two-edged sword. Whenever you let the economy drive something, or when the economy just decides to drive things, you can have multiple outcomes that you obviously can't control. So while on the one hand, yes, you have people making decisions that are related to their pocketbook that happen to be good for the environment, you also have a desire for independence from foreign oil that's manifesting itself in a different way. There was a pullout yesterday from the Pew Research Center that's a good example of this. Back in February, they pulled Americans on what they thought was most important, more conservation or more exploration and drilling. And in February, 55% of people said more conservation is important. And that number's down to 45% now. Likewise, back in February, 35% of the respondents said that exploration and drilling is more important, a fairly low number. That's up to 47%. So And the shift comes mostly among young people. So young people are now, all of a sudden, from February of this year to June of this year, changing their thinking on whether or not we should drill in sensitive places like the like in Alaska. The number among young people, age 18 to 29, on who think energy exploration and drilling is the most important policy priority, that's up from 26% back in February to 51% in this most recent poll. So you have two sides to this where, you know, yeah, we're going to go out and be a little more careful about how we spend our money. We're going to try to be a more independent nation, develop solar. All the, you know, people are thinking that way. They're also thinking, hey, maybe we need to drill some oil wells.
Isn't there tension, though, as a follow-up with the global issue, the imports, you know, the dependency we have on inexpensively manufactured products and the drain on the economy, and this possible momentum of U.S.-based electric batteries being used in automobiles and smaller-scale entrepreneurs, you know, with groundbreaking, you know, solar panel developments and the incredible influx of VC dollars now being thrown at U.S.-based companies. I mean, isn't there a real synergistic movement happening between the Go Green and Go USA? I mean, I see it, and it makes sense to me, right?
I agree, and I think it's. But I also think it's very personal. I think people are making decisions and have viewpoints that are very personal. What remains to be seen is to the extent to which this becomes an ingrained way of thinking about how we should run our economy and run our country. Are we going to be a leader in developing alternative energies, or are we going to let India and China and other countries in Europe lead the way? And I think that I don't think that we have made a political commitment by any stretch of the imagination to being the technological leader in renewable and alternative energies.
Bart, what's your take on the Go Green, Go USA issue?
Well, I believe that the entire war that's happening and that we've had for the last 7 or 8 years is really starting to scare people. And now more than ever, people want to be self-sustained. I mean, it just doesn't make sense how much money we're throwing. I was just looking up at some numbers. You know, there's some websites that keep track of how much we spend a day. It's $340 million. It translates to $10 billion a month. Now, if you think about it, if you hire scientists for a full year, it's going for the 1 month fee that you pay for the war, you can hire 100,000 scientists for one single year to develop alternative energy. It just doesn't make sense in a lot of people's minds that, you know, we're throwing this money at this war. It's ongoing, and we're not seeing any results, right? So more and more people are starting to think, you know, if we invest more money at home, develop more self-sufficient energies, you know, this whole dependence on oil will not be as much of a burden on the North American countries. Still, you know, we got India and China coming up. Their dependence on oil is only going to grow. And, you know, so I don't see the price of oil going down at all. But hopefully our self-sufficiency will go up.
Mandy, you ready to print some T-shirts up? Go Green, Go USA?
Yes, I am. I'm ready with the printer right now.
I'll take two.
You know what? I want to jump in and ask you guys a question. One of the hot topics that I remember hearing about a couple years ago that seems to have fallen off is genetically modified foods. And I know there was this, you know, this big fear of Frankenfoods, and then it just seemed to sort of fall off. Like, what happened? I mean, that was supposed to be one of our big answers for feeding the world, but then there was this huge movement towards organic and locally grown foods. Whatever happened to GMOs and genetically modified foods?
I think, again, it's economically driven and certainly driven by people's opinions and fears. And if big agricultural companies think or perceive that the public isn't ready for some of these products, they're not going to invest the money in developing them. And it's a very sensitive issue in Europe, less so, I think, here in the United States. But we've been messing around with food and with animals, with the evolution of them and modifying them for decades and decades. So really, genetically modified food is not a whole lot different than what we've always done. The question is just how hungry are we, really, quite literally? And I think we're hungrier now than we used to be, and I think the whole world is hungrier now. We know that. There's food shortages. There's riots because of food shortages. And if genetically modified food can feed more people by using fewer acres to grow the crops, then you're going to see acceptance.
Now, have we seen any serious scientific results of eating or growing or, you know, consuming these genetically modified foods?
The fears are based largely on stuff that we don't know anything about. So, you know, as far as what we do know and what's been produced, there's nothing to worry about. Some, you know, anytime you change food, you're going to change things. We have tomatoes now that are completely tasteless because mm-hmm. of all the modifying that we've done to them. And we have vegetables that have lost some of their nutrients because we've tried to make them bigger or greener or whatever. Genetically modified foods are going to be the same. There's going to be pluses and there's going to be minuses, and we're going to have to weigh the differences.
Right. It's just, I mean, I haven't seen any scientific evidence that there's any dangers behind genetically modified foods, but, I mean, clearly there's this big uprising of fear about it. So, Bart, what do you think?
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm getting a knock.
I thought you said Byron. I'm like, I have no opinion. I'm going to defer to Bart.
That was for Bart.
Sorry. I think, I believe people will come to accept it. I think in the future it will become a way of life as everything else. It's, you know, at this point I don't think we're in a big food shortage, but if you think how much our population is growing across the world, it's only going to intensify. One of the big, obviously over the last 2 years, one of the big things that you've seen is the price of corn going up, and all to biofuel. And, you know, if scarce like that will definitely be advancing the technology, especially if you look at how much research goes into approval of foods, and the people, you know, people can't really... foods will not be passed along for consumption unless they're approved by the certain agencies that we have in the government.
You know, this whole thing plays into another issue that doesn't get talked about a whole lot, and that is the buying local and the buying organic, and there's a lot of misconceptions. You know, buying local is a fantastic thing to do in terms of saving energy that goes into growing, the energy and the cost that go into growing produce and shipping produce and all of that. But often when people hear organic or they go to the store and they see organic, they think that's just a great thing. Organic is just inherently great. And it's not always true. If you take Washington State, for example, the average apple leaving Washington State gets shipped something like 1,700 miles, and that's whether it's organic or otherwise. So if you buy an organic apple from Washington State, but you live in New York, well, you're spending how much on gas to get it there? One bunch of grapes shipped from California to New York takes about 4 cups of gas to get it there. So what kind of does that
interesting.
Make? So when we look at organic, it's not always good. Organic can be terrible for the environment.
Right. So, interestingly enough, I've actually spoken to farmers in the New Jersey area who are very against the idea of organic farming, and they feel that it's kind of a financial hardship for them to have to produce as many crops and to, you know, to get as much produce from 1 acre of land without pesticides.
The organic label doesn't always mean what you think it does either. I mean, a lot of the organic milk, for example, is produced by huge companies with huge farms where the cows are, you know, not treated all that well and not fed all that well. And whereas local, if you go, you know, you see the guy down the road who's growing this stuff, he might be using some pesticides, but it doesn't mean he's using the worst varieties, and it doesn't mean he's not growing excellent produce that's going to taste better and have more nutrients in it and cost a heck of a lot less to get to market.
Right.
I have an interesting question for the group, and we can go around and sort of hit some of these big areas one by one individually, but what's it going to take to motivate mainstream America to, let's say, buy local, buy all their produce local, to convert into a biodiesel form of communication, to install solar panels in their house, to turn off your outside lights at night to save electricity, for businesses to implement mandatory policies that employees have to conserve energy by doing subtleties like turning off your computer at the end of the night. What is it going to take to motivate people to follow down this path of living a better life?
I think that's an incredibly complex question with multiple answers, but one simple answer, I'll come back to the economy. I lived in Sweden for a year a couple of decades ago, and already then, gas was very expensive, apartment space incredibly limited. You had to be on a 100-year waiting list to get an apartment. So, you know, forget about it. Maybe your grandkids could live there. One car per family, generally. And when people got in their car to go somewhere, they really thought about, you know, whether they could afford to do this and where they were going to go and how they were going to combine three trips into one and that sort of thing. And you're starting to see some of that happen in America now, and it's driven by the cost of gas. People are slowing down. They're driving less. I'm doing it. I'm stretching a tank of gas to 2 weeks now, where I used to use a tank a week, simply by driving less, driving a little slower, coasting up to stop signs. And that behavior in relation to driving, I think, can be repeated in other areas. I mean, I live in Arizona, and the electricity here is outrageously expensive compared to other places I've lived. So guess what? I turn the thermostat up in the summer, and I deal with a couple degrees warmer in the house. I just have to. So, you know, part of your answer is make the government at the state and federal level is going to have to step in and provide incentives for solar panels to be installed on all new houses so that it's a fair playing field. All the contractors either have to do it or are encouraged to do it. Homeowners are, you know, footing the bill when they buy a new home, but it's everybody has to do it. And we're going to pay more overall for our electricity, and that's going to make that solar electricity more competitive.
So I'm hearing government incentive, high price, financial incentive, changing habits. How about you, Bart?
Habits, yeah, you know, and there's the key right there. Habits are habits. They're not going to change unless something changes. Mm-hmm. And so you can either wait for the price to go up, or maybe it won't, as it didn't for you know, half a century in this country, where we had cheap access to energy and resources and, mm-hmm. and you know, lumber and concrete and copper and everything else. But all those things, we're starting to learn, all those things are in relatively scarce supply, and it's going to force change. But the government can help out here. Instead of just letting the whole economy, you know, go to hell in a handbasket, we can begin to make some smart decisions about investments and incentives so that we get to where we need to go in a rational, thoughtful process, instead of, you know, having to have some sort of a meltdown first.
Bart, how about you? You want to try to tackle that impossible question I asked a minute ago?
Yeah, well, I totally agree. I think it's price alone is probably the biggest driver in a lot of change that will occur. Price of fuel obviously is going up, and we'll see if it's going to be hitting the $2 mark this year, but there will, again, take any food that we get from far here in Canada out from the States, the price is going to just go up. Somebody has to absorb the cost. So you'll see people choosing more locally grown food. In terms of solar power, I think that's a huge untapped market currently. You look at how many solar panels can be installed on every single roof of every single house in Canada here or the States. And also, there's new technologies being developed, you know, solar paint, which will absorb any sun that hits your walls, right? So there's tons of more potential from solar power that will drive any new plug-in hybrids that will be coming out within the next few years, that you can plug directly into your wall and essentially drive for free, right? And you're getting free energy out of the sun. If we don't get taxed on the sun, and you're driving for free, you know, the average I believe the average American drives something like 30 miles a day, you know, and the plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles, you know, they can easily go to the 50 to 100 miles.